Hello everybody and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe. The show airs every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And now on to the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Lisa, one of your co-hosts. Welcome to the Chit Chat Cafe Live. We're airing live from Artist First World Radio. And you're going to hang out with me and my girlfriends for the next 2 hours. Right, girls?
Yep, we're here.
Yep, we got some cool guests tonight. For our 9 o'clock hour, we have Mike Sullivan, who's a friend of ours. We know him really well through Facebook. He's an author. And we have Laurel House, who's a quickie chick. She's going to give us some dating tips and some cool advice on being a girl. Right, girls?
Yeah. She's amazing, Lisa. You will love her.
I bet. Now, Dee, you have a very big event going on in your life tonight. Tell everybody about it.
Oh, my gosh. It's breaking my heart right now, but I cannot be prouder. My son is the owner and proprietor of The Blind Barber in New York City, and the grand opening in L.A. is tonight.
That is super cool. Tell everybody what kind of business it is. It's a really cool business.
It is the coolest business of coolest businesses. Think about Prohibition times and a throwback. Take a 1920s blind barbershop, and it is an upscale barbershop for men, but then the wall slides back, and there is the secret bar behind it.
And that is so cool. Now, how did he think of that concept?
You know, Lisa, how did kids think of this? I mean, he left a prominent law firm. You know, he always wanted to do law, and then this came about. He had this vision. He had this idea, and he went into the East Village in Manhattan and did this, and it took off. It just took off. But beyond that, what happened was the Blind Barber's barbershop, which was kind of like a front for the bar in the back, made its way into the world. It has been in Maxim magazine as one of the top barbershops in the country.
That's amazing.
The bar has been noted as one of the best in the industry. And now there's a product line, the Blind Barber, coming out. So these kids amaze us with their, you know, ingenious ideas, their innovative ideas. And who knows what they think of, but, you know, we wish him luck tonight. He's in Culver City, L.A., standing room only, 600 in deep there tonight.
Wow.
And so we're sitting here, and girls, we're going to go. We're
going
to go.
We're going. Let's plan a
trip. Oh, we're going to go.
We're taking a picture at cafe on the road.
Yeah, we're going. So congratulations, Blind Barber in L.A. tonight. We're with you here, and we send you all our love and hugs from three proud mamas.
That's really, really exciting. It's so cool.
It is so cool. Very cool.
So what'd you girls do for Mother's Day weekend?
What'd you do, Betty Ann?
Well, my Mother's Day weekend was very, very hectic. My daughter graduated from college. So it was such a busy weekend. It was nonstop. But it was a beautiful weekend. Couldn't ask for better weather. But on Mother's Day, we had a party for her graduation. So it was kind of like a combination Mother's Day party, graduation party. It was really nice, very nice. But I didn't cook.
That's
I ordered the food. I figured at least I'd give myself a break. So all the food was ordered, and I didn't have to do any cooking. It was really nice.
Yeah, that's
and
really
nice good. Time.
Good.
Yeah.
See, what
good.
Did you do?
Well, I'll tell you what. We started the weekend out, and I wasn't really sure which way we were going because I had one in L.A. and one here in New Jersey. And Jeff flew in from L.A. to New York, and we went to the most magnificent restaurant on Saturday evening. He made reservations at the Hudson Clearwater in the West Village.
Ooh.
And it's a secret garden that you go through, and then you just pull up these, like, little, I'm going to say, like, fire escape steps, and the most amazing restaurant. The food was, I mean, unbelievable. We spent a wonderful evening with him. I got a gift, my favorite candle. It's Les Lavos candles. He gave me that, and it was amazing. And then the next day, my daughter took me out to one of our local places, which is called Redstone Bar and Grill.
Oh, we know that place.
Oh, my gosh. We went there for brunch, remember?
Yeah, did you go again? You cheated on Betty Ann and I. You cheated on us.
I did. I had to go for Mother's Day. But you know what? We had a great dinner out. So I had one day apiece with my kids, and it was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I couldn't have asked for anything more.
Oh,
how about
nice.
You, Lisa? What happened?
I cooked. We had brunch. I was exhausted. Brunch for Mother's Day. All I wanted to do was sit and pin on the computer. I wanted to go tanning at the salon and pin. And I couldn't pin until 10 o'clock at night because I said they'd be making brunch. And I did manage to go tanning. But that was... I got a beautiful flowers and from both sons. Each son gave me their own bouquet of flowers. And my daughter gave me a pearl bracelet with a sparkly thing on the top. It was real pretty. And, yeah, it was very nice. Plus, it was my sister's birthday, so a lot going on at the Kocher house on Mother's Day.
Oh, you are funny. You are so funny. You know, I think it's about, you know, if you think about it, we were so lucky because this Mother's Day, we actually had everybody with us. And I can remember some Mother's Day, like Lisa, you know, when your son was in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I spent a Mother's Day when my son was in Italy. And we had everybody with us this year, so it was so wonderful. So I hope all our listeners had a wonderful Mother's Day.
Oh, that's nice. Girl, I have a riddle for you. What's the solution to a bad hair day?
not being able to find your Spanx? I don't know. What?
Wear a low-cut top. Okay, my boy, enough with this silly joke.
Okay, where are you going
at? I want to introduce our first guest. I think poor Mike's waiting. He's probably getting a headache waiting, listening to us yapping like a bunch of hens. Right, Mike?
How you doing? I was just finishing up a chocolate cupcake just to get myself energized.
Yeah, what was that chocolate cupcake? What was that cupcake truck you put on Facebook today?
Oh, I love Chase and Hostess cupcake trucks. It's a habit of mine. I'm hoping if the back fall opens up and the cupcakes fall out.
I can be right behind that truck.
I don't know. I seem to follow them for some reason. I don't know why. They end up in front of me a lot. I don't know why that happens a lot. You know, I must be on their route when I pick up my kids at the high school. I think that's the reason.
Well, Mike is an author. Mike has two books out. He has Necessary Heartbreak, which you joined us last year to talk about. And now you have your new book called Everybody's Daughter.
Right, and that's the sequel to Necessary Heartbreak. It's about...
Why don't you start out and tell everybody your story, because you got a really cool story.
Yeah, the story is about a single father and a teenage daughter. I take it from the standpoint of a single father. Some of this material was written a couple of decades ago. While I was homeless, and it was at the age of 23, I was homeless, and I was riding the New York City train at night, just trying to keep warm. And while I did that, I had like a green plastic bag of belongings, and that was all I had, and I had in my notebook, my pen, and I'd pull it out, and I'd start writing. And I wrote a lot of the childhood reflections, some of the stuff that really moved me emotionally, and a couple of those items are in there. You know, the day that I thought about committing suicide because my mother had died from cancer and things were not well at home, and I felt like I had nowhere to turn. And fortunately, I dropped the knife in the park that day, and that's in the story itself. And hopefully the story of Everybody's Daughter is inspirational, that no matter how bleak it gets, is not to give up on life. And that's really the message, the central theme of this, where Elizabeth, the teenage daughter, and the father, they time travel back to first century Jerusalem at the time of Christ.
Interesting. Tell everybody your real story, though. How this all came about.
Well, the book you know, came about, as I mentioned, a couple of decades ago, where, you know, I sat on a train and I started writing the notes to some of the things that affected me the most. And as I mentioned, one of them was the time that I thought about taking my life, and that's part of this particular book. There were more memories than necessary heartbreak. The homeless memories are part of that particular book. That's the central theme of necessary heartbreak. This particular book, it's about forgiveness and trying to move on and releasing the anger that had built up during those years and to find the happiness, which was what he had in this particular time with his daughter. And as most people, if you read the first book, you know that Elizabeth Stewart was born the night that her mother died. And it was an anger that the father had kept for so many years. And he was able to time travel back during the time and witness the crucifixion of Christ and understand what true love and sacrifice was. With everybody's daughter, he's worried about the woman that he had fell in love with during that time, Leah, the Jewish widow. So with the help of an extremely talented editor in Selena Robbins, I was able to formulate what I consider a deeper, the plot is deeper, it's more rich, the characters have more tense between them. It's a suspense book, there's some mystery surrounding it, and I consider this the greatest thing that I've ever written. Now, I've written a lot of things in my life, and a couple of things that I've done, you know, mostly have been nonfiction, so this is my second attempt at writing fiction. And I believe this is, with the help of Selena Robbins, I think this is the greatest work that I put out there by far. Necessary Heartbreak was a good story. Everybody's Daughter is a great story, in my opinion. And it's not because I wrote it, it's because I also had the help of a great editor along who helped me formulate this plot. And it's gotten great reviews on Amazon and on Goodreads and with the bloggers so far. So I'm really excited about it. And the book just came out recently.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. So you can get the book anywhere on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or at Apple or at Sony. Or it can be on any Kindle or on your computer. And to me, it's a very wonderful, inspirational story. And it certainly is going to reach, I think, people that have families. And if you have a son or a daughter, you'll understand the parental stress that's involved in raising a teenager as well. And I think I've depicted that pretty well in this particular story because I do have two teenage daughters of my own. And as you know, they can drive you to eating a lot of cupcakes.
How long did it take you to write the book?
This one I felt was a real grind because I really wanted to make the plot richer, and I'd learned from some of the mistakes I made with Necessary Heartbreak. While Necessary Heartbreak was a good story, the structure of the plot was thin, and as I mentioned, with the help of Selena Robbins as my editor, she educated me about how it meant to make sure that the characters interacted between each other, the suspense between it. So I would say this probably took a good year and a half. I had formulated part of the story, but I call it the blob. And once my editor got a hold of it, we sat down and we spoke a lot on the phone several times. And we worked over each particular scene. And it was a lot of work. But, you know, it was very satisfying work. The great part about this book is I had not written fiction very often, and this was my second try. And I learned quite a bit about how it was to write fiction because I'd been a nonfiction writer for most of my life. Most of my 25 years of writing professionally have been writing about sports or some way nonfiction. So it's a big difference between when you write fiction and nonfiction. And it was a very gratifying experience because Ms. Robbins taught me so much about how to write fiction.
Mm-hmm. Now what's next, Mike? What do you have on tap for your next?
Well, the next book is going to be called The Greatest Christmas, and it's going to conclude this trilogy, and I'm in the process of writing it. But while I write it, I have to promote this book. You know, I did not go with a traditional publisher this time. The first book was published by Simon & Schuster. This book was published by Fiction Studio Books in Connecticut. It's an independent publisher, and through the support of Lou Aronica, who believed in this story, he decided to bring it to print, as well as on the Kindle or on the Nook or any kind of e-book reader that you have. And he's invested his money in this particular book and story. So I'll have to promote and work as hard as I can to make sure this story works. The great part is I can control the price of the book, where I could not do that with Simon & Schuster, with a traditional publisher. So I'll be able to reach a wider audience due to keeping the price at a very low point. If you want to get it on the Kindle, it's only $3.47 at Amazon.
Wow.
Yeah, if you want to buy it as a book, it's only $8.22 at Amazon. And the prices are similar all across the board, whether it's at Barnes & Noble or with Apple or with on the Kobo. And there's all sorts of different ways you can purchase this particular story. So a lot different than it was with Simon & Schuster. I was very grateful to be with such a wonderful publisher. But with the way the digital revolution has occurred, I felt this was the best way to reach a bigger audience, is to go with an independent publisher.
Mm-hmm. Mike, I think our audience who haven't listened to you before would be very interested in your story before you became an author.
Well, I mean,
get into that, or would you prefer not to?
No, there's many things that happened during this particular time frame. A lot I have spoken about. Much of it is in the story. I do come from a background that wasn't so great at home. It was some tough times, you know. My relationship with my father was not a great one. It's better today, as it is. He still lives in the same house that I lived in fear in. I rarely go back there, just from the standpoint that I get nervous going back there in some ways. The part of the book, writing it, is a very therapeutic experience. And what I'm trying to do now is to move forward in this particular process. And it's a way for me to heal emotionally. And I feel that the longer I saturate my mind with these particular experiences, it kind of holds me back as a person, and it has affected me in other ways. The good news is that I have two beautiful teenage daughters. I have a wonderful family that loves and supports me. I have a roof over my head, whereas at one time during the months of December and January 1983 and 84, I did not. My roof was a subway train. So there are many wonderful things that I've learned to appreciate. I don't take for granted coming home and having my daughters say they love me. It wasn't something that I heard very often growing up. So there are many wonderful things that have happened to me over the past several years since I've gotten married, and I'm trying to learn how to appreciate them more as I'm now in my 50s, and I realize that time moves so fast as my kids, that when once I was putting diapers on them, are now getting ready to go to college. So it's kind of it's kind of a very sobering thought that, you know, it just seemed like yesterday I was carrying around a diaper bag and covering high school basketball for Scout.com, which was a company that I just ended a relationship with after 15 years. So there's been a lot of different things that have happened in my life that I'm grateful for now that they're in the past, and that I'm very appreciative of what I have today, and that is food on the table, a roof over my head, and people that do love me.
Mike, hi, it's Dee. I just wanted to ask you, what inspired you to start writing?
Probably more out of desperation. I would say that, you know, when I was a kid, I was a very sensitive kid. I was very shy. There was a lot of arguing and yelling in the house that I grew up in. And I was a kid that kind of avoided confrontations, and I'd hide in my room, or I'd go in the closet, and we had this safe in our closet, and I'd climb up on the safe, and I was so small that you couldn't even see me. There were coats in front of the safe, and I used to hide in there so nobody would know where I was, and they couldn't find me. So the way for me to get out of such experiences, I started writing poetry when I was very young, things that really affected me, where, you know, the first girl that you fall in love with, the first crush that you have, I would be there writing a little poem about it. you know.
Can you remember the first thing you wrote?
Yeah, I do. It was about this girl, Valentina, and I'd written about it actually on my editor's blog, Selena Robbins. She was a hockey fan, and of course, any girl that liked sports, I was certainly interested in her. And she had written this poem about hockey, and I said, boy, that's incredible. She not only is beautiful. She's not only like sports, but she can write poetry too. So my heart went thump thump that day when I heard her voice her poem, and sort of like that helped me move along to express my feelings about how I felt about a particular person as well. So I started writing poetry from that day on, and I knew I wanted to be involved with sports somehow, and I knew I was going to become a sports writer at one point in my life. But I also had a dream of writing a novel, writing the great American novel. And it's funny because the novel that I wrote now was actually helped by a Canadian. My editor is up north, and she's a Canadian, and I think she's helped me write one of the great American novels, if I have to say so myself.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I will tell you, I think so many times now they tell people to, you know, write your thoughts down, to journal things. Because it is, as you said, they're very therapeutic. And, you know, and it can be a memoir. It can open up your inhibitions. It can release your imagination. If you were to tell someone who wanted to become an author the best way to get started, what's that way?
What you just said, write how you feel. For me, it was a release. It was a way of me to shelter all the yelling and the arguing that was going on in the house. So I'd close my door upstairs in the room, and I'd find a quiet place, and I'd pull out a notebook. And I still do it to this day. I'll take a notebook and pen. That's how I do my books. I write it out first in the notebook, and then I transcribe it on a computer. It's a habit that's never gone away from me. Anybody. My youngest is constantly writing. She's always writing, and she's always coming out with these different ideas. And I think it's also from just observing, too. You observe people. You listen to their dialogue. People always wonder why I was so quiet. Well, I was always listening. It's a way of communicating on paper. You listen and you observe people's habits. Best places are in airports, certainly. You sit around for a couple hours. You watch people, their habits, what they do, how they talk to their kids, what's the language, the dialogue. So it's a matter of observing and writing as well. And, of course, you write with emotion. You write with what your passion is about. My passion is I have a great love for the theory of time travel. So I incorporated that in my two stories so far. And family, what affects me the most in my life? Family, you know, the relationship between myself and my daughters. I mean, I consider... those two, my daughters, the two greatest gifts I have in my life. They're the two, the gifts. They basically are, and they've taught me some things as well. They taught me how to open up emotionally as a father to a daughter. So I've had relationships with my daughters that probably not the average person has had, so I'm very thankful and grateful for that.
Mike, this is Betty Ann.
Yes.
How are you?
Hi.
Well, I want to know, if you didn't experience such hardships in your life, do you think you would have been able to write?
Probably not this story. I've always thought about it, you know, and in a lot of ways, you know, I remember a few years ago, Bruce Springsteen once said he's written a lot of songs about father and son relationships. He said he'd like to thank his mother for showing him that you can work at a job and be happy at it. And then he said, I'd like to thank my father who gave me much to write about. So in that way, yes, my father and the relationship that I've had with him is certainly a motivation to write. There's no doubt about it, and it strikes a chord. Some of the best material is written when people have been downtrodden and they've suffered a period of bleakness. And I consider that period of time, you know, my mother suffering 2 years, watching her suffer for 2 years, basically being down to bones before she died from breast cancer, at the age of 47, shortly after that, landing on a train at night, I consider that's my period of bleakness. And during that time, I wrote much of the material that you can see a necessary heartbreak or in everybody's daughter. A lot of the flashbacks to those particular moments, I kept an honest view of it. So yes, there's no doubt that if I did not suffer that particular time frame being homeless, I probably would not have written what I've written today, and I probably would not have what I consider my greatest gift inside me, which is my gift of compassion. Because up until that point, I was a very hard person. I was very withdrawn. And seeing all those people on the train who were different, had different stories, some were much like me as well, had fallen through the cracks, had nowhere to go, to see their faces at night during the holiday times, realizing that they had nowhere to go, I had nowhere to go, you realize that we have to do a better job of showing more dignity to people who are suffering. And it gave me, as I said, my greatest gift inside me, which was compassion, and opened me up today, and it's allowed me to write more honestly about my feelings and what affects me more.
Do either of your daughters want to write, Mike?
I'm sorry?
Do either one of your daughters, are they interested in writing?
Yeah, my youngest does. She writes quite a bit. My oldest wants to be in film. She's going to film school starting next fall.
So they're involved in the arts.
Yeah. They both have an interest, you know. So when as a director, you also have to write as well. So she's interested in directing, my oldest. So they're both interested. My youngest is very prolific too. She's constantly writing. She writes every day. She writes more than I do at this point.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, I spend a lot of my time now trying to promote the second book, but she's always writing and she's coming up with different ideas. So I expect her to be a far better writer than I am right now.
That's phenomenal, Mike. I have to tell you, I'm sure maybe the next book could be about the topic of being a father of two teenage daughters.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always something. You know, what I tried to do is I tried to incorporate, like, the personalities of both of them in Elizabeth, who is the teenage daughter in Necessary Heartbreak and Everybody's Daughter, and they're both always, like, trying to say, well, is this me? Is that me? You know? So I go through that quite a bit with both of them. But it was a combination of both that are in Elizabeth, the teenage daughter. The great thing is you listen to these kids and you listen to their dialogue. And I think that's one of the great things that I've done with that particular, the dialogue between the father and the daughter is dead on as far as what it would be today if you had your own teenage daughter.
Mike, this is Betty Ann, and you mentioned how you really are interested in time travel. If you had a chance to go back in time and change anything in your life, what would it be?
That my mother would go for a breast exam a lot sooner in her life, knowing that it was part of her mother's life as well. Her mother died at a very early age from breast cancer. That would be the thing I would do, you know, that she would not have to suffer that way, that she would go for the exam a lot sooner in her life than she did at that point.
If you took it another way, and that's so, I mean, that has to be heart-wrenching, but who would you say you pattern yourself after as far as a writer? Is there anybody that you've read their writings and that you pattern yourself after?
Well, I would say, yeah, that the writers that have interested me the most, I mean, I love Hemingway, the way he experienced life. I don't like the way he concluded it, of course.
Yeah.
But I do. He was a person that experienced life and wrote about it. Whereas also, I love Charles Dickens. I love reading the classic writers as well. I mean, some of the stories that he's written, Christmas Carol. I always find myself going back to reading that particular one. I mean, there's so many great authors out there, and there's just not enough time to read them all. So if I had a combination of one, I would love to live life like Hemingway and to write like Charles Dickens. I mean, that would be a dream. But I'll settle right now for Michael John Sullivan at this point.
Mike, I read that you have a new position as a board member for the Long Island Coalition of the Homeless. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. And that's where I mentioned the time when I was homeless, I got my ability to be compassionate about other people and their plight. And that's something that's resonated with me over the years, is that seeing and making sure that I can do whatever I can do with the Long Island Coalition of the Homeless. And I've spent a few, I got to know the people there a couple years ago, and I volunteered for a couple of different events to help out. And last October, I gave one of the keynote speeches at the conference, and we were able to sell Necessary Heartbreak there and raise some money for it. So I try to do that as much as possible. So a few months ago, they asked me if I would consider being a board member of the coalition and continuing to help them along, since, of course, here on Long Island, it's no different than it is anywhere here in the United States. The economic climate has been a disaster for the past several years. It doesn't seem to get any better at this point. I'm hoping eventually it does, but what happens is that the people at the coalition are not only burdened with people looking for shelter, but what they're finding is a lot more people are asking for food. They're paying for their mortgages and they're paying their rents, but they just don't have the ability to put food on the table every night. So I try to do as much as I can with the coalition, and at any event I'm there to try to help out. We try to sell the books, and 100% of the donation does go to the coalition. So it's been a wonderful relationship. I feel at least I'm trying to do anything I can. At least I feel like I'm taking some action. You know, that's the thing. I wish I had a couple million dollars to give to them. I don't. I'm like everybody else. We're all struggling paycheck to paycheck here on Long Island. You know, our taxes are high. The school system here is very good, but you pay with it, with your taxes. So, we're all living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, and I thank God that my wife has a wonderful job, and I pray every night that she keeps it, you know, because my relationship with my job has ended after 15 years, and now I've tried to reinvent myself. I'm trying to be a novelist, and since this is my only second work of fiction, you know, you're talking, it's a long shot. You know, it's like anything else. You hope. You hope that people enjoy the story and you gain an audience and you can continue to write.
Right, where you're living your passion. And now, remind our readers where they can get your book.
Sure. Everybody's Daughter is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's available at any online bookstore. Or if you go into a bookstore, you can order it from any place. They'll order it for you, and they'll have it in their store within 5 or 6 days. So Everybody's Daughter is available wherever books are sold, and if you want to get a really good discount, I would suggest Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or any kind of independent bookstore that's online. They usually give you a pretty decent discount off the book. It's usually somewhere around $4 for the e-book and $8 for the print copy.
Okay, well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you on Facebook.
Yep, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, our pleasure.
Nice chatting.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Mike.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be back with the Quickie Chick. We're going to talk some girl stuff.
Quickie Chick.
And now back to Chit Chat Cafe on the Artists First World Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. Our guest tonight is Laurel House. She's also known as the Quickie Chick. She is a lifestyle author, expert, and personal trainer. Hi, Laurel.
Hello.
It's so nice to have you here tonight.
I'm so excited to be here. It's great to talk to people who are excited about learning about quickies in a different way.
I have to tell you, when I was doing a little computer research about your quickie tip, and my husband happened to walk by and he goes, "Quickie? What are you talking about, quickie?" I said, "You said it's not what you think."
I always say it's a different kind of quickie, although I do talk about actual quickies in the book, too, because you can't have a book about quickies and not actually mention quickies.
No.
Okay, I love her already.
I mean, the way I talk about the actual quickie is the fact is, you know, we're busy. We don't have time these days to do anything, really.
That's true.
Well, I've got to tell you, Laurel, speaking about your day, just tell everybody where you were today.
Well, I've had just a crazy week. I shot a segment for E! News yesterday, which will actually air next week when my book comes out on Tuesday. And then this morning I went and shot a radio interview that was also a live web TV show, and I was interviewed by Us Weekly, which is going to come out tomorrow, usweekly.com, and I'm on stands, newsstands in Shape Magazine. I'm in their hot list in their June issue. So it's been interview after interview, and it's been amazing.
You got it going on, girl.
It's, you know, when you work really hard for a couple of years at something, and suddenly in 1 week, everything starts to just bloom. It's pretty spectacular. So hard work definitely pays off. That's the lesson here.
It does.
Yeah. And perfect. I mean,
Laurel,
perfect. Yes?
Go ahead. How did you first come up with your Quickie Chick concept?
Well, Quickie Chick really started with my desire to learn how to work out without necessarily taking the time to work out, because we're all busy. We don't have time necessarily to go to the gym or dedicate an hour to our workouts every day. So I thought, how can I work out effectively, efficiently, and do something that I actually like to do? So I walk. I mean, that's my regular thing. My mom is a walker. She taught me to be a walker, and I walk my dog for 45 minutes. But in order to make your body change, you have to change your workout a little. So I started doing this quickie workout in bed, which is a real workout on a bed. And what's great about working out on a bed is that you have the instability of a bed. So unlike the floor, when you're on a bed, it's a little bit shaky, which means it's forcing all of your stabilizing muscles to fire to keep you from falling over. So you're actually burning more calories. It's also great first thing in the morning when your alarm goes off, instead of hitting snooze, I just start moving my body a little bit, and then suddenly I'm getting oxygen to my brain and I'm energizing, and after 15 minutes I've done a decent workout and I'm ready now to jump out of bed. Or at the end of the night when I'm watching TV, why just lay there? Multitask your time. Do something to burn some calories. So I shot this quickie workout in bed that I truly do. I put it up on YouTube. Within a couple of days, I had 1 million views. And that sort of started it.
So you mean I literally can lay in bed and I can work out?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's actually what I shot for the E! News segment, was a quickie workout in bed. And I showed exercises for abs, arms, and legs. And one of the workouts I did, I call it trim thighs, and it is a saddlebag busting workout. And it's what I do when I'm laying in bed on my iPhone. I mean, it's that passive of a workout, but the next morning you will feel it in your legs.
Okay, Laurel, what I do in bed, literally, is I put my legs straight up in the air, because when they're in the air, my legs and my knees look better.
That's true.
Now, where do I go from there? With yoga pants on.
Well, you can do, I mean, you can put them straight up in the air and then do the flutter kicks.
Okay.
So you're gonna cross them back and forth. And then to amp up the exercise and make it a total body workout, you're going to engage your abs and lift your upper body up a little bit, so getting into a sit-up position. And then flutter your arms in the same movement. I call it double X, because you're X-ing your legs and you're X-ing your arms fast, back and forth. So basically, you'll do it about 100 times.
Scissor kick.
Yep, just crisp, exactly. Scissor kick your feet and your arms at the same time. And so you're engaging your abs, so you're doing a sit-up, basically. You're getting cardio done because you're getting your heart rate up. And within 100, I like to do everything for 100 seconds or 100 reps. I call them daily 100s. So if you can't
do with my husband?
With your husband?
Yeah.
He can do it.
Can I just push him out of the way and do this?
I do find it's more effective to do quickie workouts in bed without the husband in the bed.
Okay, I'm in the guest room. No problem. That's okay.
But then there's a bunch of, if you look on my website and you look at the saddlebag or trim thighs workout, you'll see the other exercises that you can do, clam and reverse clam and elevated clam and all sorts of things that are actually very simple to do. It's just the amount of repetitions that make the difference. So the quickie workout in bed concept, or the quickie concept, started as workouts in bed, and then I expanded it into a lifestyle. What else don't I have time for? Well, I don't have time to go to the spa, so I created refrigerator facials, which is basically saying you don't have to go and spend $150 at a spa. Instead, go to your refrigerator, take out a tomato and a lemon, cut it up, and put it on your face, and you have a mini acid peel. So it's actually going to help to exfoliate your skin. It calms your skin. It helps minimize acne. I get eczema, and it helps with my eczema. I get it from stress, and that it helps with that. And there's tons of different facials that you can do with just ingredients out of your refrigerator. Honey and yogurt are very popular, but you can also do horseradish for your hair. So if you have thinning hair, you take horseradish, mix it with some either yogurt or olive oil, massage it into your scalp, and it helps to it helps stimulate hair growth. So basically, I thought, okay, what don't I have time for? And I did everything. It's the book is actually Quickie Chick's Cheat Sheet to Life, Love, Food, Fitness, Fashion, and Finance on a Less Than Fabulous Budget. So I cover everything. It's the Cliff Notes version to life.
Wow.
Laurel, it's a lot.
It is. What seems to be the most common question people ask you?
Oh, wow. I mean, it just really depends on the person. People love the fitness stuff. But I think at the core, people just want to feel good about themselves. They want confidence. They want to feel pretty. They want to know that they're worth it. I think a lot of women, it's the confidence that's the issue. So I have a lot of tricks to boost confidence, and one of them is faking it. And as much as that sounds strange, it's actually not fake. It's you have confidence deep inside, but maybe you're having a hard time extracting that. Maybe you feel uncomfortable or insecure about something. Well, do these little tricks to help momentarily boost your confidence, to help fake your confidence, and pretty soon you'll embody that confidence, and you'll be that confident chick who can walk into a room and own it, and smile and look people in the eye and flirt, and you know, the book and the website are for so many different people. The book is geared towards 20-something girls who just graduated from college and are really just trying to figure it out. So I say it's a great gift. If you're in your 20s, great, you should buy it. If you have a daughter or a niece or a friend who's in their 20s and trying to figure out life, it's the ultimate cheat sheet for them. But for everyone else, there's tips on how to stock a healthy pantry. You know, how to get back into the dating world if you're divorced. I mean, that's just kind of
that's
a scary thing.
Dating stuff.
Give me all the dating stuff. With some quickie tips. Let's get some quickie tips.
Well, when it comes to dating, one thing is put some effort into it. So if you're in a relationship or if you're dating for, you know, someone for a couple of months, remember when you very first started dating them and you always shaved your legs, you made sure that you had a nice outfit on, you made sure that your bra and panties at least didn't have holes in them, like you tried. Mm-hmm. After a while, you stop. And suddenly, you don't even, you know, oh, I'm seeing my guy tonight, or my husband and I have a date, or whatever it is. Ah, I don't need to shave. And just, it's the little things that we forget to do. And it's those little teeny, teeny things, the quickies, that can either make or break a relationship, a body, a ego, everything. And I think that people just need to start paying attention to the little things more often. It's like saying, I'm going to work out once really hard this month. Well, that's not going to make you fit. Same thing with, I'm going to do one really nice thing for my husband or my wife this month, just one. Well, that's not going to maintain that relationship. It's doing the little things. It's doing the little maintenance every day with your body, the little workouts. It's doing the, you know, the sweet notes for your husband or your girlfriend or your boyfriend. It's the teeny little things that make all the difference. And chicks, I mean, we know. We want our guy to come home with flowers on occasion, even if he just pulls over on the side of the road and picks a flower and gives it to us. It makes us feel so good.
You want to feel special.
Exactly. I remember I was watching a piece on Oprah, and she said that people want to be acknowledged more than anything else. What they want is acknowledgement. And the way that people want to be acknowledged, she says, it's with little kids, even dogs. If someone walks into a room and you care about this person, no matter what you're doing, stop for 1 second, acknowledge them, give them a genuine smile, and then get back to whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Good advice. Very good advice.
It's just, I mean, it's quickies, and it's, you know, there are lots of really fun tips. But in the end, it's feeling good about yourself. And if having a great body or having doing a refrigerator facial that's going to unveil your inner glow, or having a great outfit that makes you just feel rocking, or having a great job, whatever it is that's going to make you feel good about yourself, fantastic. I really don't care which one you choose. Just do something. Because at the end of the day, how you feel is what matters. And that's the core of what Quickie Chick is all about. It also has, you know, the functional things, rent, roommates, you know, how to get a job, how to find a mentor, job applications, how to do online dating. It's all of the little essentials, but at the core, it's confidence.
Laurel, you have been so much fun to talk to tonight. We really had a great time.
Thank you.
Can you come back and visit us again sometime?
I would love to. I'd maybe once the book is out. The book is out on Tuesday, so it's going to be crazed until then. But after the book is out, I'd love to come back on.
Oh, great. Okay.
We
appreciate you coming on tonight.
I
you are so
you.
Much fun.
Thank you, guys.
I'm fluttering as we speak. I'm in my stilettos because there is a stiletto workout.
I have a whole section of stiletto. I call them stiletto quickies, and they're exercises that you can do at work in your stilettos, in a dress. I even have a section called Mile High Quickies, which are exercises that you can do on an airplane in your seat so that you don't get, you know, you don't get antsy legs, and you keep that blood circulating when you're on a long flight. It's all of those fun little things that keep your day interesting.
Well, Laurel, we have to say goodnight now, and we'll have you back again sometime, and congratulations on all your success.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a great night.
Okay. Thanks,
all right,
Laurel.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Very cute.
Yeah.
Good girl.
She's adorable.
Very, very cute.
I love
cute.
It. I absolutely love it. I don't even care if he's in the bed next to me. I'm going to throw my legs up in the air and flutter.
Well.
We have to have her back on to give us more quickie advice.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa.
Anyway.
I have to ask you.
What?
You know, you went to Spain a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And, you know, I heard you speaking about, you went out to dinner, you saw the flamingo dancers. Tell us about that, because I got to tell you, I was enchanted, enchanted with your story. To the point where I poured two glasses of wine and then laughed some more.
And with the flamingo dancer hollered at everybody because we were talking?
Uh-huh.
The flamingo dancer stopped in the middle.
No.
He was real serious. He was real serious with his tight pants on and his arms flinging in the air. And everybody at the table was talking. He stopped. You stop talking. I'm trying to dance.
I just put that over there.
Well, I think it's time to wrap. I think it's like 10 o'clock. I guess I'll have to finish that story another time.
Okay.
So good night, everybody. Stay tuned for our second hour. We have a really cool hour. We're going to have our Bachelorette update, and we're going to have Vicky come on, who is a transgender young lady. And that's it. Good night, Dee. Good night, Betty Ann. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. We'll see you after dark.
Ma.